Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Thursday. Can't believe how many things there are to talk about in sports live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, and right here on FS1. 1 hour from now, Greg Cosell, our NFL meat sandwich. If you bet the NFL, if you play fantasy football, or you just love talking about professional football in America, my favorite 10 minutes of football talk during the week. Greg Cosell, 1 hour. Joy Taylor is joining me. Joy, how are you?
I'm doing fabulous.
Have you ever had a job, Joy, that you kind of conform to the job? It doesn't feel like it's in your DNA.
Yes.
You don't know. We've all done that before.
Of course.
So when I used to work at the other place and I interviewed at Fox, the Fox people kept saying to me, you're not an ESPN guy. You're not a Connecticut guy. You're a West Coast Fox guy. You just conformed for 10 years. You're coachable. And I want to start the show talking about that today. Tom Brady has put his arms around Antonio Brown. I mean, he's moving in with a family. Tom Brady's brand is clean cut. I mean, it is clean living. Yoga, avocado ice cream, wholesome. No drama. Focus. And now he's putting his arms around Antonio Brown, who is defined by drama. Domestic incidents, throwing furniture out of a building window, almost killing a kid, battery and burglary charges, ongoing sexual assault. People are saying, why is he desperate? This is the year Tom Brady is going off brand, right? Yeah, you know, guy gets a divorce, buys a sports car, you know. In New England, we thought he was stoic and part of a system. In Tampa, he's taking these unnecessary risks. Or is he? Or is this who Tom Brady's always been? He was just conforming to New England. California dude, this is who he is. He's a risk taker. Antonio Brown talked yesterday about Tom Brady, and to say he admires him is an understatement. Here it is.
Tom is my boy, one of the greatest leaders to be around. You know, he's encouraging, always inspiring. He brings out the best of the people around him. He wants the best for everyone around him. I mean, he's the greatest quarterback all time. Nothing he have done in the past matter. And I just learned a lot from him. He's been a great guy in my corner and one of my close friends.
I don't think Tom's lying. I don't think AB is. Derek Jeter always felt like New York. The good-looking single guy for all those years. He felt like a Yankee. Troy Aikman has always felt like a Dallas Cowboy to me. Big Ben has always felt like a Steeler. Tom Brady's never felt like Boston. He just conformed. I hear people in media saying in New England, he's changed. Yeah, that's why I know he's not Boston. They never do. Boston's the most, and I lived right next to it, the most parochial city in the country of any size. Providence and Boston, statistically, demographically, they do studies on this. They don't watch national sports. Tom Brady is aspirational. He married a supermodel. He's creating a global brand. He has houses in Costa Rica, Montana. Tom's always been about growth and evolving. That's not Boston. Boston is you work hard, make a decent living. You buy a summer home on the Cape or maybe Maine, and that's about as far as you leave. An occasional vacation down to Florida. That's what Boston is. They stay there forever. Tom Brady is fun and happy. Boston's cranky and intense. Look at Tom Brady's lifestyle brand. Does it say Boston? No drinking. Avocado ice cream. Lots of yoga. That does not say Boston. It says California, where Tom has multiple homes. It says West. Tom Brady was never Boston. Belichick is. Smart, academic, cranky, intense. Plays golf on the Cape in the summer. That's about as far as he goes. Maybe a trip to Florida down, you know, Jupiter, Florida, play some golf. Belichick is very New England. Brady never has been. In the summers, he got out of there. The minute he could get out of there, he went out of there. He goes international. He had a place in New York. He goes west skiing in Montana. He's got places in L.A. and Palm Springs. I just feel Tom Brady conformed for 20 years. And I think all of us have done that. Brady's not changing. Brady's always been willing to take risks. He's always befriended guys who've had issues. I mean, Gronk is not your typical NFL players. They were super tight. Go look at his lifestyle. He's not Boston. He's aspirational. He's happy. He's always adapting. He's always growing. That is not Boston. I lived right between New York and Boston. New Yorkers tend to be more aspirational, a little more global. Boston's parochial. His brand is no drinking. They're defined by Sam Adams. I mean, breweries, that is Boston. So I don't buy that Tom has changed. I keep hearing that. I think this is who is closer to who he is. Fun, adapting, evolving, thinking big, taking big risks, California thinker, always evolving, trying new stuff. That is the opposite of Boston, and it's absolutely what I think Brady is. So I think this is interesting. So the big story last weekend, and you wouldn't have think it would be the big story, but the Tua thing, we love our young quarterbacks. And, you know, Tua plays at Alabama. He's a legendary high schooler from Hawaii. He goes to Alabama. There's a term, Tua time, when joys from there. We talk about it all the time. It was fun. Like, Rams, Dolphins wouldn't have had a lot of juice. It's like with Ryan Fitzpatrick. Instead, it was a lot of juice. And there's a story this morning. Brian Flores, the head coach, who I like a lot, he says, listen, I don't know where this came from, all this talk about we're auditioning Tua for the next 9 or 10 games. I don't know where it's come from. Here he is.
I'm comfortable with what comes out of these 10 games. I think since I've been here, I think everybody's heard me talk about the development of players, improvement on a daily basis. So I just don't see how someone close to Dolphins thinking could see that, could say that this would be a 10-game audition. That's just, you know, not sure where that came from.
Because it's obvious. Ask yourself this question. Ask yourself this question. Find me the other examples where a red-hot veteran quarterback has won 3 of 4. The 3 wins are all blowouts. The loss is close to maybe the best team in the league, second-best Seattle. In a winnable division, by the way, for the first time in years, it's winnable. It is winnable now. Even Ryan Fitzpatrick, who went to Harvard, he's pretty smart, he was shocked by it. I mean, when they moved off Eli Manning in New York, he was washed. He was no longer productive. Cincinnati didn't have a choice. You had to go to Joe Burrow. They didn't have anybody else. The Chargers were going to sit Justin Herbert for the year until a doctor, Tyrod Taylor, punctured lung, ready to go, kid. When you start looking at the young quarterbacks, we know, but Baltimore, they don't want to play Joe. They wanted to win games with Joe Flacco and let Lamar sit for a year. That wasn't the plan. Joe Flacco was bad. They started losing. They put Lamar in. What? Find me the examples of veteran quarterback really winning. 3 of his last 4 games are blowout wins. The only loss is very close to maybe a top 2 team in the league, Seattle. Even the quarterback is, a Harvard guy is shocked, and we don't think it's a little bit of an audition because Miami has Houston's first-round pick, and right now it's a top 5 pick. Go look at the last 3 drafts. I'm going to list the first-round quarterbacks, all of them. 4 of them are hits. They have full support in the building. Burrow, Herbert, Kyler Murray, and Lamar Jackson. They have everybody in the building is in, and they may struggle right now with Baltimore, but Baltimore came a play from beating Pittsburgh. Those 4 guys have total support in the building. The 8 others, there are questions in the building. Jordan Love didn't have a good camp. Daniel Jones, Dwayne Haskins, Baker, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen has struggled early and struggling now. Josh Rosen, and I think Tua. because Tua doesn't have the amazing speed of a Russell Wilson or Lamar or Kyler. He doesn't have the size of a Josh Allen. He doesn't have kind of the durability of some of the other guys. I don't think you see that special at practice. I think a lot of his stuff, let's throw him out there. See how he takes the live bullets, right? Let's see how he plays in real space, real time, against real teams, at a real speed. But I believe absolutely unequivocally, 8 of the 12 first-round quarterbacks, there are questions in the building. Ask yourself, what? Patrick Mahomes, there were no questions in the building with Patrick Mahomes. So even though the Chiefs were winning, losing, you know, they were like 9-7 that year, there was no rush. They were winning enough. They just kept Alex Smith in because they knew Mahomes was the guy. The Chargers were, I was told this by the Chargers. They were planning on sitting Justin Herbert all year long. They knew he was good. There was no questions in the building. They're like, I talked to their GM. It's like, huge arm, great kid, 4-point. He's going to be great. But we're no hurry. Everybody wants to sit their guy. So why, with a red-hot team that's overperforming, and for the first time in 20 years, it's a winnable division, the Patriots are bad, Buffalo is like reeling, you pull him? Because I think there's questions in the building. And I think the next 2 weeks, when he faces Kyler Murray and Joe Burrow, I think you're going to size him right up and look right up. And who does he face the next 2 weeks? Kyler Murray's one of them, and I think, is it Justin
Herbert?
Justin Herbert. You can size him right up. He doesn't have the wiggle of one or the arm of the other, and I think it's going to become prominent. But I think if you know, there's no rush. You would never take a hot quarterback. I mean, Mahomes, everybody in the building knew. Peter Schrager told me. He's like, everybody in the building knew. Like, we got a star. What's the hurry? We're winning enough games. Let's just let him sit here. We're probably good enough to make the playoffs. They had Alex Smith, who was, well, I mean, we know what Alex is. Alex is closer to Ryan Fitzpatrick than he is to Patrick Mahomes, right? I mean, that's fair to say. So I do think it's an experiment, and I don't blame Miami. Frankly, I think Joy and I said this. You got to figure it out. Got to see if he can play. Because there's not a lot of special you're going to see at practice with him. He's not big, doesn't have a huge arm, doesn't have a huge wiggle. You got to see him play. But I absolutely think this is an audition. And in the NFL we have today, there's a lot of auditioning all the time.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Oh, my buddy, Nick Wright. First things first, check it out every morning, weekdays, 7:30 a.m. Eastern, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. 7:30 a.m. Eastern, not Easter. All right, Nick Wright is joining us. All right, let's get to the Baker Mayfield thing, because I like to be America's honesty broker, yeah. But some have suggested that I lean a little anti-Baker. Breaks my heart, but I'm going to give the floor to you. You run the Cleveland Browns. What do you do with Baker?
Yeah.
You know, Nick, my rule is you can't have the fourth best quarterback in a division. You just can't, at least not long term. What do you do with Baker?
Yeah, listen, it's election season. People understand you're a Baker conservative and a Darnold liberal, right? That's about what it is. Like, Darnold, it's, oh, wait, what about this? What about that? Baker, it's what about this? What about that? So here's the thing, and here's where I'll defend Baker. This year's quarterback draft class seems like it's going to be very good, the one that we just had, Tua, Herbert, Burrow, but we don't know yet because it's been too early. Can we look at what the last 5 years of first-round quarterbacks look like? I made this fancy graphic this morning for First Things First, and I saw you did something similar, and I think it's worth delving into, because what are we evaluating Baker against? He's obviously not Mahomes, and I think it's safe to say Lamar is a star, Watson is a star, and Murray could be. Is there any other quarterback taken in the first round the last 6 years that you're convinced is better than Baker? Goff and Wentz went just as high as Baker did in the draft, essentially.
Yeah.
They've been worse this year.
Well,
those other guys might lose their jobs, and the other guys beneath them already have lost their jobs, Colin. So, like, can I just put it back to you? Like, what are we judging Baker against?
Okay, so I agree with the GOAT tier and the Pro Bowler tier, and the average starter tier, Goff and Wentz. But Goff has been to a Super Bowl, and he got there without a legendary defense, and at the time, an old offensive line. Wentz and Goff are better than average starters. Baker's in the barely holding on with Darnold, Jones, and Allen when you consider the quality of people he played on. So I agree with your graph. I just don't think Baker, with his off-field stuff, with some of the nonsense, I think Goff and Wentz, there may be questions in the building. I think this Cleveland staff, they're looking for anything but a question. I don't think there's any confirmation in the building from anybody that he's the guy. That's my difference of opinion.
Colin, you're talking about Wentz. This weekend, when we saw Cowboys-Eagles, we got to see in real time the experiment of what if you pulled a fan out of the stands to play quarterback in the NFL, and we got to see Ben DiNucci. That's the level of play we got from Carson Wentz in that travesty of a game. Carson Wentz was good, was great for 13 games in his career. That's it. Goff, when you talk about Baker having everything perfect, Goff had everything extra perfect, and since then has regressed. So, we just see it differently. Would I give Baker a contract extension? No. Would I pick up his fifth-year option? Absolutely. And I know Joy was talking about the Browns missing their window. I feel like people are trying to skip a step with the Browns. In the 50 games, before Baker Mayfield stepped on the field, they won 4 times. They're going to make the playoffs this year. It's a massive improvement, so let's just give it a little bit of time.
All right. So Brian Flores, who I think everybody kind of thinks is going to be one of the Belichick guys that works, it looks like that, he says this is not an experiment for Tua. And I say, if it's not an experiment, find me the examples of a team that won 3 of 4, all 3 by blowouts, only lost close to a Super Bowl potential team, Seattle. You pull him. The quarterback is shocked. You can win your division for the first time in 20 years because Belichick and Brady aren't working together. Let's just pull him and try Tua. I think they're doing it because they have Houston's pick. I think they're doing it because Tua doesn't have the size, the arm, or the wiggle to blow you away at practice. And I think people in the building are like, we better find out in 10 games because I see what you can be. It's called Burrow and Herbert. I see what you can be. It's called Lamar and Kyler Murray. I'm going to give you 10 games. That's 2020. That's the new rule. I do think it's an experiment with Tua. Do you?
No. I must admit, I heard you talking about this.
Yes.
And I asked off the air, your ace producer, Alex Rosenbaum, I said, is there a story I'm missing? Have I just been following the election and Tua got hurt again? Like, what's going on? Tua's on the hot seat a game in? They just drafted him. You said he doesn't have the size. Did he shrink since May? Like, they know, what are we talking about here? They could have had Herbert. They liked Tua more. Don't you think it's possible they went to him because of how he's looked in practice? They're like, you know what? He's not going to be that much of a downgrade from Fitzpatrick even as a rookie. We think we can make the playoffs with either guy, so let's go with the player with the upside who we need to get the reps to. You know how much I adore and respect you, Colin Cowherd.
Yeah.
This is approaching your Mount Rushmore of craziest things I've ever heard you say. He's played 5 quarters. And you're like, oh, hot seat. It's 2020. What are we talking about?
All right, well, we'll see. Okay, so I said Jeter is New York. Aikman is Dallas. Big Ben is Pittsburgh. There are players that feel like an organization. Tom Brady wasn't Boston. He's aspirational. He's happy. He's international. He married a supermodel. His brand is avocado ice cream and yoga. He's not Boston. He conformed to Boston. What you're seeing now, his relationship with AB, taking more risks, wanting to help run a team, putting it out there. This is who he is. And people in Boston are like, boy, Tom is changing. And I'm like, no. Belichick is New England. Smart, cranky, and intense. And he golfs in Nantucket. That's a vacation for him for an hour. Like, I think Tom, this is closer to who he is. He is a pro player, big risk, put it out there, and I think the AB thing's going to work spectacularly. Your thoughts?
Oh, okay, so I think the most interesting things that are going to be said about that topic, you just said them. So I want to take this slightly different because I had an aha moment while I was watching your monologue this morning. Brandon Marshall said something very interesting to me this morning when we were arguing about Baker Mayfield. He said, Nick, you like Baker because you're like Baker. Chip on your shoulder, always felt underestimated, some questionable off-the-field decisions, have a bit of a brashness to you. And I thought about it, and I was like, okay, you might have a point. And then I hear your ongoing love affair with Tom Brady, and I'm like, oh, that's it. Colin loves Brady because Colin is Brady. He knows what his brand is, always trying to expand it, was once in a cold northeastern city, couldn't wait to get out of there, married a supermodel wife, married a famous artist wife. There's a lot of things. If we can continue the analogy, taking a younger, maybe with questionable off-field resume, you know, protege under your wing, trying to help them along. Like, there's a lot of things here where I see Colin Cowherd and Tom Brady, so he can never do wrong in your eyes because you're looking in a mirror. Maybe a slightly better looking mirror, but you're looking in a mirror. And so that's what's happening here.
Well, God, what you really said is you're Baker and I'm Brady, and I'd rather be me, according to your analogies right there. I'll be honest with you.
I mean that, for the time being, sure.
Finally, a minute left. Yeah. I'm going to throw the craziest thing I've ever said. So the NBA is going to start in December, okay. And LeBron's like, timeout. I just got done playing 8 weeks ago. Okay, if you're one of the final four teams, Denver Lakers, Boston, Miami, and you play any team that did not go into the bubble, you always play Denver, Lakers, Boston Heat. Get that. That's a home game. Those four teams this year are going to play 65% of their home games. Any non-bubble team that's had 8 months off, you play one of those four. LeBron's like, hey, if you're going to make me play now, I get something back because I saved the league. If I opt out, the league's not the same. Those teams, anytime they play a non-bubble team, they play at their place. Am I nuts?
Okay, so that is such a outside-the-box idea. I haven't fully... I would need more time to think about that specific proposal. But I do totally agree that if they are going to try to start December 22nd, there needs to be some type of dispensation for the teams, there's a level of it for the teams that made the bubble, another level for teams that made the playoffs, and another level for the final four. Because if you didn't make the bubble, you've had the longest offseason ever. If you made the bubble and not the playoffs, you've had a pretty standard offseason. Meanwhile, the Lakers and the Heat, and as you mentioned, the Nuggets and the Celtics, their offseason's going to feel like just one long all-star break and that's it. So I don't know if you have quite solved it, but I think it's got to be something along those lines. I'm going to let that you've given me a lot to think about here. I got to let it marinate for a moment. It is certainly not the craziest thing you've ever said. It is not even close to the craziest thing you've said in the last 31 minutes because you just benched Tua and he just started playing. But it is very interesting. I like it a lot.
Oh, that's funny. I already benched
Tua.
Talk
to you later, buddy.
Nick Wright, first thing.
Yeah,
first.
You did. He's out. Tua's out. See you, my friend.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
It's been really cool. I love professional football. I love college football. And it's really exciting to see these young quarterbacks come in and really hit immediately. Now it's easier today than it was 10 years ago. It's easier for Lamar and Burrow and Herbert. You can't touch the quarterback. I mean, years ago, you could win a Super Bowl. The Baltimore Ravens won a Super Bowl when they had Ed Reed and Ray Lewis and Chris McAllister. They would grab the receiver. You could just grab him at the line of scrimmage. You could jostle with him downfield. It's a different world. You can't hit receivers high. What does that mean now? Receivers go over the middle, and they're very confident. It was 10 years ago, receivers, you could name the guys that would go over the middle. Guys didn't want to go over the middle. Alligator arms was a term. Like, nobody. Receivers are more confident than ever. Quarterbacks aren't going to get hit. Defensive players have to. Aaron Donald watches where he tackles you. You don't see the violence and the kind of hits. You can't hit anybody up high anymore. So it's all benefited offensive players. And so it's easier today. But that's the way the game's gone. I still think guys who are great are going to be great, and guys that stink are going to stink. It may take guys who are marginal and keep them in the league a little longer. But I'm reading some stuff on Joe Burrow this morning. He's been terrific. Love him. And I thought to myself, in the NFL, it really comes down to three tiers. There's only three. I'm not going to list who's the best because that's just so subjective. But I don't even think this is subjective. The three tiers are, let's go to the first tier. These teams are lucky to have their quarterbacks. They're Hall of Famers. You're lucky. Seattle, Green Bay, Kansas City, and Tampa, you're lucky to have them. That is a once-in-a-lifetime talent. You'll never get anybody in Seattle as good as Russell Wilson. Ever again. Tampa's been around for 40 years. They've never had anybody even close to Brady. Rodgers and Favre, I mean, come on. You just don't go from Favre to Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes. These are once-in-a-franchise talent. The second group of guys, they're the future. Now, the future may not be 10 years. It may be four. But it's Burrow, Derek Carr, who I like more than the rest of you. Goff, who I like more than the rest of you. Herbert, Lamar, Kyler, Ben, Ryan, Deshaun, and Carson. In the building, there is a belief, almost overwhelmingly, that's the guy for at least the next 3 years. Like, Ben could retire. And then, and I don't list everybody here. And then the third tier is you got to make phone calls. I put some of the people that are the best. So I didn't put just everybody here. Kirk Cousins, Matt Stafford, Matt Ryan, Bridgewater, Breeze, Josh Allen, Garoppolo, Cam, Dak. That I think you're making calls. I think you have to consider drafting somebody. Now, Josh Allen's the interesting one. I didn't put Baker or Darnold in here because we know the Jets are probably going to move off him. And we don't think Baker's going to be in Cleveland forever. These are the guys. Now, Bridgewater, like him. But they know there's limitations with Teddy. Breeze is old. Josh Allen, to me, is a guy that was bad in college, bad his first year. He's back to being not very good, and he was good for about 2 hours. I think he's losing people in Buffalo because I think this coaching staff is great in Buffalo. But I may be wrong on that. Here's my point. The quality of quarterback is so good. The bar has been raised so much with, like, Burrow and Justin Herbert. I mean, it's just like getting raised. And it's going to get raised more next year with Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence. It's going to get raised again. That the bottom of tier two, in many eyes, is Jared Goff, who many of you would not put in. Just think about this. Here's how good the quarterback plays. Here's how much the bar has been raised. Jared Goff in the NFL is averaging, if you look at his numbers, he's a 65% completion guy, a mid-90s passer rating guy, and you get two touchdowns for every pick. That's the bottom of tier two. By the way, I think he's Matt Ryan with a better arm and more athletic. And Matt Ryan won an MVP. That's how good I think the league is. That this is a middle to a bottom tier two guy is Jared Goff, who I absolutely think will get to another Super Bowl, as long as he gets protection and some weapons with Sean McVay. So when you see the quality of these guys come in and pop, and then next year with Trevor and Justin, man, that raises that tier two. Half this league right now is thinking about somebody else.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
I've always had kind of this belief. I've always wanted to be an NFL general manager, and I have certain rules of the draft. One of the rules I've always had in the draft, I'm not sure if I've mentioned this before or not, I would draft a running back at least minimum every other year, but never in the first two rounds. So Seattle drafted Rashad Penny a couple years ago, and I said, this is a terrible draft pick. It's been a total bust. I do not believe you draft a running back. I mean, Herschel Walker, maybe he arrives today. You're like, okay, that doesn't look like anybody I've ever seen that's ever played the position. But my rule in the NFL draft is you draft a running back at least every other year. Because remember, one out of three are just going to bust.
Right.
And you never draft before the second round. You draft third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh. And why? Because in the NFL, I believe there's four positions you have to pay. You have to pay a great quarterback. You have to pay a great left tackle. You have to pay a great pass rusher. And then you're either going to have to pay a great corner or an Aaron Donald, a Fletcher Cox, an interior lineman. So save your money for the four guys. You don't have to pay anybody else. Now, increasingly, wide receiver is, you may have to spend some money. But I think the big four contracts are quarterback, left tackle, pass rusher, an elite pass rusher, and probably an interior defensive lineman or a corner. If you have an elite pass rusher, you maybe not have to pay your DT. You can pay your corner. But you're going to have to somebody you can lock out, a Stephon. Even Belichick pays Stephon Gilmore. So that means I got to get breaks other places. And a prime example is when Ezekiel Elliott wanted his contract. I talked to two general managers who said, you never sign a running back to a second contract. You just don't. You just keep drafting them. You get trapped. Well, right now with Zeke, he does not look the same. He's averaging like 3.5 yards a carry. Troy Aikman on Dallas Radio talked about it. Zeke, is he wearing down? He talked about it this week.
Dallas on first and second down runs the ball the second least amount in the NFL, which I find interesting. I know that there's games when you get behind, but for the season to be second on early downs, on running downs, you know, when they have been built to run the ball, and that was the commitment they made, both in the offensive line and at running back, that surprised me a little bit. But, yeah, I think that the wear and tear, he's a physical runner. He runs as hard as anybody that I've ever seen, quite honestly, and I think he's a great finisher and all that. But, you know, that begins to take a toll, and it starts to happen about this time.
4 years ago, they beat the Steelers. I want to show you a video. I apologize to the radio audience. Look at how fast Zeke is. Look at the holes. This says a lot about what's happened to Dallas. Zeke is pulling away from people. He is not touched on this play. He is running away from DBs and linebackers. The holes are massive. Again, this is not all on Zeke. Look at these holes. This is against the Steelers, by the way. This is against a Mike Tomlin defense on the road when there were fans, hard to audible. I mean, it's just massive holes. Nobody is touching him. Nobody's touching him on these plays. And then you look at him now, and I know I just take clips, but we go back and look this morning at the averages, and a lot of this is the offensive line, but he doesn't look the same. He doesn't have the burst or the escapability. He goes down easier. His fumbles have gone up. He's just not as explosive. And again, the offensive line right now looks like it's backups to backups sometimes. But even earlier this year, when it wasn't all injured. So, you know, it goes back to everybody was clamoring for him to get paid. And people were saying, do not give Zeke. This was my knock. I don't believe in paying people 2 years in advance. I'll pay you a year early if you're a quarterback, a left tackle, you're Aaron Donald, Khalil Mack, Stephon Gilmore. Like, I get that argument. But this is the argument, is that if you buy the second contract, running backs fall off a cliff. I've seen this my entire life. You're very good, and then by year four, that's why running backs, by the way, want to sign early contracts. They want to get paid, because I think the drop-off for Zeke is significant. When I watch him play, Goulet, you're a Cowboy fan. You watch him play. You live for, does he look like the same running back?
Nope. He erodes a little bit each year.
Every year.
And it's finally hit a point where you're like, oh, he's not great anymore. He's just good.
That's what he is. And you're paying him great money. And I think in the NFL, you can only pay four people that. The wide receivers now have increasing value, but you can find them anywhere, so you got to be careful, but they do matter. All right, Greg Cosell joining me, as he always does on Thursday. 41 years working at NFL Films, the most objective guy out there via the Coward Global Satellite Network. So we got into this discussion this morning, Greg, about when it comes to young quarterbacks, I don't really pay attention too much to wins or stats. But and I don't think Joe Burrow has a great arm. I think it's pretty average. But there's something about him. I don't know if it's his calmness. He just tends to throw it to the right place. He doesn't have great protection. So you tell me, what does the film say about him? Where's the special sauce? What is he doing to move the ball so well?
Well, it's funny you say that, Colin, because that was the one thing when I evaluated him coming out of LSU that I said that the only knock against him is he does not really have a big arm, and he certainly doesn't. And every once in a while you see that pop up on certain throws, but he's incredibly refined in his understanding of where to go with the ball, what he's looking at both pre-snap and post-snap. Therefore, he plays with a very nuanced sense of rhythm and timing for a young quarterback, and he has movement ability. We normally don't think of him as a guy who makes second reaction plays, and in fact, this offense is really built with the amount of empty snaps that they play on the desire to get the ball out of his hands quickly. But he does have very, very good movement skill. You know, we used to say he's a deceptively good athlete. We should just say he's a good athlete. He's really has every trait I think you would look for, other than the fact that he's not going to drive the football with tremendous velocity.
So you told us last week on Lamar Jackson, Greg, you said, listen, the NFL, the coordinators are saying, throw outside the numbers. We're just going to blanket. We're going to drop seven into coverage, eight. Prove that you can do it. So against Pittsburgh, he had a lot of turnovers. What did you see with Lamar against the Steelers?
Yeah. It's a great question because I watched that tape. And, you know, it's a very interesting conversation about the changing nature of the quarterback position, Colin. I know you've talked about it a lot. And You know, what are quarterbacks now in the NFL? Do you need movement ability? A lot of people would say yes. But then what's the balance between that and being efficient from the pocket? And right now, he's not very efficient from the pocket. He's a little frenetic. He's a little undisciplined. He's not seeing things. There are throws to be made. There were in the Pittsburgh game. There are throws to be made that he did not turn it loose, because now he tends to move prematurely. Now, will he make some otherworldly plays because he's got that kind of athletic ability? Absolutely. And that's why the question of where's the balance is a good one and an important one as we go forward in evaluating quarterbacks. But I'm still a believer that you can't leave throws on the field. And, you know, in an era where everybody's putting up big numbers throwing the football, it took him until the final drive to get to 200 yards. And it would have been the fifth game in a row that he had not thrown for 200 passing yards. So right now, I think he's probably trying to figure that out as well, because he knows he can make plays with his legs, but it doesn't always work.
Yeah. So I think the Colts are a good football team that have a very low ceiling at quarterback. They probably have the worst athlete in the NFL at a position that increasingly asks for a little athleticism. Yeah. But it's funny about their defense. Is it good, or is Darius Leonard the best linebacker in football? Because when Leonard's out, it doesn't feel the same. And when he's in, he's just he's like a magnet to the ball. So what do you make?
That often happens with.
What do you make of the Colts, their defense, Leonard? What do you make? Because that's the way they're going to get into the playoffs. It's not going to be because they're wildly explosive offensively.
No, and I think their defense in some ways, and I know they have DeForest Buckner, but I think in some ways, it's probably a little similar to the San Francisco 49ers defense from a year ago. It's kind of built on their front four. It's a very good front four with a bunch of names other than Buckner. And, of course, Houston is still there. But they've got some other very good players. DeNico Autry, Grover Stewart is a nose who's a very, very good player when you watch the tape. They don't blitz very much at all. As most teams do nowadays, they mix man and zone, but it's a coverage-based defense, and that's the way they play. And Leonard is a great player. He's an explosive athlete at the linebacker position. So the question ultimately becomes, offensively, what can they do as they continue to play games and play, ideally, important games? Because defense, hey, everybody wants a great defense, but we know that when you start playing really, really good offenses, sometimes you give up points. I mean, look what happened in the Super Bowl with the Niners last year. They played great defense for 3.5 quarters, and then all of a sudden, a really good offense was able to make some plays against them.
So we get into this discussion. I said in the offseason, Drew Lock, I think, has it. But I've also said you cannot have the fourth best quarterback in a division. He's not Mahomes. I don't think he has the talent of Herbert. And Derek Carr throws a wonderfully accurate football. I watch Drew Lock, and I'm not into the dance and stuff. I've never been into that. Like, win a few games before, you know, you're Michael Jackson. Like, settle down and win games. But I watch him, and there's moments. And then I watch him against the Chargers, and I say to myself, wait a minute. He wasn't good in the first three quarters. They go to a package. They take the pressure off. He's got a clean pocket. Well, everybody in the NFL that's reasonably good is good then. What is the films? Because I think John Elway looks at this and thinks, oh, God, I got Herbert now twice a year? I got Mahomes twice a year. Who is Drew Lock on film?
Well, I think he's very talented with some things that need to be worked on. And let's remember one thing, Colin. We live in a world where we want to make a definitive decision about a player literally after he plays five minutes. This guy has started, 10, 11 games in his NFL career. He was hurt this year, so he's, in a sense, starting from scratch. He's capable of outstanding throws. I mean, that deep dig he threw to Judy in the fourth quarter last week was a big-time NFL throw. Now, he's a kid who still drifts a bit in the pocket. He'll still throw some balls off balance. I think that his decision-making at times needs work. His ability to eliminate what is there and what's not there is still needs work. But there's a lot to work with. And I'd like to see him be able to play, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 games in a row with the same cast and see how it plays out, because there is a high level talent there. And you see the big time throws, and he does have movement ability. He's a pretty good athlete.
All right, so we know a lot about Green Bay, and here's something I've been on. Joy and I have talked about this a lot in the last year. The minute somebody gets physical with them, the Niners, the Eagles last year at Lambeau, the Chargers pass rush, Tampa Bay, they're a front runner. They are great in the octagon as long as they can control the fight. They're great with a lead. But there's something about this defense. It evaporates quick. And
right.
the holes this way, it just wasn't Dalvin Cook. The holes were so substantial. So what is it? Bad linebacker play? Bad schemes? What's wrong with the Packers defense?
Well, this week was very specific. And I say that because Mike Pettine is their defensive coordinator. And he likes to play, and this is when they're at their best, when they play in what we call their sub-defenses. Five defensive backs, six defensive backs. When you play Minnesota, by the way, as was the case in the playoffs last year against the 49ers, when you make them play in their base defense, because Minnesota lines up with multiple tight end sets and a fullback, so Green Bay played in their base 3-4 defense, and they don't want to play in that defense, and they're not very good in it. And that's what happened last week. So not every team, by the way, can line up and do what Minnesota did or what
right.
the 49ers did in the playoffs last year.
Yeah. So they did. That's just a bad matchup for them. And it happens in the NFL.
It's a bad matchup.
It's a bad matchup. A physical team that can do multiple tight ends, put them in their base. It's a bad spot for Green Bay.
Absolutely.
All right. We know that there's things you like about Tua. I know that. There's things I like about him. Did you see anything? I know it's a start, but boy,
yeah.
he looked a little small. Anything you saw in the film and you're like, I don't love that. I don't love that.
You know what? Let's be a little realistic. He didn't have to do much. He was not asked to make any tough downfield throws. But my sense was that he sees things quickly.
Okay.
I think he knows where to go with the ball. That will be tested more, obviously, as he plays more. Not every game's going to turn out like the Rams game. I did think that his 15-yard completion to Grant on the first quarter touchdown drive showed Tua reading the field, because that play design was the post-corner combination to his left. And the defense took that away, and he came all the way back to his right within the timing of the drop, and he hit Grant for 15 yards. So there was a small sample size, but I think he did okay.
All right, I want to go to your Drew Brees. And I've said this, I don't buy the Saints. I think there's a way Drew Brees can win now, but I don't think their defense is as good. He doesn't throw it over the top. I feel he's very, you know, this will sound outrageous, but I don't think he's that far from Teddy Bridgewater. And that's why when he left last year, Bridgewater looked a lot like him. I think they're very similar at this point in Drew's career. So what is he? And then we'll move into the play of the week. What is he at this point?
He definitely doesn't throw it, Colin, you're right, the way he used to. And that's noticeable on a number of throws. The ball just doesn't come out real well. And on occasion now, he's a little bit inaccurate with certain throws that you know he used to make without a problem. So he's not the same quarterback, and therefore their offense is different. And we'll see how far it can take them. And they're obviously going to be playing a Buck defense this week that is very aggressive. They blitz. They get people clean to the quarterback, which you don't see very often in the NFL. But say what you want about Brees, Sean Payton is a very, very good schemer of offense in getting people open. And that's essentially the play I want to show. In a close game with the Bears last week, he had a touchdown to Jared Cook, which came one play after he missed a wide-open Jared Cook on a ball that he wouldn't miss in 100 years. So let's take a look at this touchdown to Jared Cook that came at the end of the first half. And again, it just looks like pitch and catch right here. And it became pitch and catch because of the design. They're going to go trips to the wide side of the field and tight trips. Everybody inside the numbers. The three receivers are there. They're going to have Smith, the inside receiver, run an over route. That will eat up the safety. Then you're going to have Carr, who's number two to trips. He works to the flat, and that eats up the flat defender. So what do you end up with? And you're going to see this as it plays out. It's going to end up with Cook working against an outside leverage corner. But it's the design of this. There's Smith taking the safety with him. There's Carr expanding the flat defender. So what do you get? Cook one-on-one with an outside leverage corner, because Cook was initially lined inside the numbers. So this was beautiful design to create a throw, Colin, that I dare say you could probably have made?
Barely. All right, Greg Cosell, 41 years, NFL Films on a Thursday as always. Greg, great seeing you.
Thanks, Colin. Appreciate it.